I hope not. I think she's one of the most dangerous, and I don't use that lightly, elected officials we have, who clearly has betrayed her oath to the Constitution.
Hi there, it's WAMC News Director Ian Pickus, and on this episode of the WAMC News Podcast, my latest conversation with New York Congressman Pat Ryan, a Democrat from the 18th District, for the Congressional Corner. Congressman Ryan, welcome back.
Thanks for having me.
How surprised were you, honesty question, to see the Knicks beat the Celtics?
It made my... I needed that win on many levels. It was awesome. Long time coming.
Do you think they, as we speak, they have not tipped yet against the Pacers? Do you think they could finish the job?
I think so. I mean, I thought the Celtics were our biggest hurdle, not that we take the Pacers lightly. Still have a lot of, rough memories as a kid of the Reggie Miller days. So hopefully we can move well beyond that phase. And I'm optimistic that I think we could go all the way. It's very exciting.
You know, we'll get to the serious stuff in a second, but I'm about your age, and I still don't think I've gotten over the Rockets finals series. I don't know if I ever will, but if they get it done this year, it will help.
Yeah, well, I'm just my boys are 5 and 3, so I'm just excited they get to see some great Knicks basketball.
Yeah, make sure they bottle it up because it doesn't always happen.
No, it's going to be good. This is the beginning of a new era here.
Well, you're optimistic about basketball. What about Congress? As we speak, we are inside of a week to Memorial Day, and Speaker Johnson says that the House is going to get the quote, big, beautiful bill over the finish line by then. Is he right?
We'll see on the process. Throughout the last few years, frankly, I've been down here in Congress. The Republicans have had a lot of basically internal civil war, frankly, on a lot of these bills. So we'll see if they can overcome that this time. More important than the process, though, is the substance here. I mean, this is going to be an incredibly harmful bill to essentially 99% of the American people. So unless you're Elon Musk and other mega billionaires, there's a lot of harm, unfortunately, that we're fighting back against in this bill. I'm happy to go into the details, but at the high level, it's major, near unprecedented healthcare cuts. It's devastating cuts to food assistance. It's, and by the way, in my district alone of 800,000 people, to give you some numbers, that's 200,000 people that receive their care, their healthcare from Medicaid that would be affected, half of whom are kids. That's tens of thousands of families who count on help to not go hungry. And not to mention, this adds nearly $5 trillion to the national debt, which I think we can all agree is not something we can afford to do.
Well, let's start by talking about the Medicaid changes. Republicans are pushing a work requirement and stricter eligibility. So specifically, where's your objection lie and how do you see it?
Well, we still don't know exactly how they're going to do the cuts. There's a lot of trickery, frankly, that they try to do and blame people who have no other option but to get health care through Medicaid, which, again, is about a quarter of my district and most Americans. 70 million Americans get their care from Medicaid. They essentially blame them rather than acknowledge that what this really is they're just trying to make it harder for people to get health care. They put up a bunch of administrative paperwork and red tape and make it difficult for people that need care to get care. Of course, we all agree that folks should be working when they can, and that's already built into the system. So this is really, frankly, dishonest cover for their action.
I've been reading a lot about the impacts of the proposed cuts that are now getting closer to being in a finished package. I'm having a hard time understanding the politics of it. Presumably this would affect every district, every House district in the country. And it's hard to imagine that anybody will be happy to suddenly lose the coverage they have. So do you understand the political side of it that Republicans are approaching right now?
I've asked myself the same question over and over. I think we can all agree our goal in America should be to get more and better healthcare coverage that's more affordable to more people. I think that's a very, very popular 80-20 or 90-10 kind of a thing. And it's another example, frankly, of today's Republican Party being really out of touch with where the majority of the country is. You've got some very extreme far-right folks that are really driving this policy, including Trump, who promised not to cut these critical programs on the campaign trail and now is both enabling and allowing this to happen. And, you know, I think the reality is unfortunately, a lot of folks who count on Medicaid often don't have are less politically engaged. For example, half of them in my district, about 100,000 of them, are kids who can't even vote. So I do think it's a pretty cynical political move to cut the care from the people that have often less, or in the case of children, no ability to actually exercise their own vote to block these cuts. And that's just really sad, and it'll be harmful. And I really think it's un-American.
What is your message to that percentage of your constituency? You know, a couple hundred thousand people potentially who are receiving Medicaid. I mean, what should they do in the short term and the long term if they're likely to be affected by this bill being approved?
Well, and the other piece that folks need to understand, which I should have mentioned, is it's not just those that get their care directly from Medicaid. Every hospital, especially in my district, most of whom are rural and very distressed in terms of their financial situation, count on Medicaid funding into their hospitals to keep them open. So this not only affects people who directly get their care from Medicaid, but very likely could lead to either full hospitals being closed or certainly significant parts of hospitals, particularly mental health care and other critical care. So that's an important piece too. This isn't just, even if you don't get your care from Medicaid, you will almost certainly be harmed. And that's not fear-mongering. That's just backed up by lots of analysis and stats. So my message to folks of what they can do is we're in a really critical moment to speak up and fight back. And in particular, we only need, the House margin is so close. It's just three people. We just need a few Republicans to have the courage to stand up against these really extreme kind of far right colleagues of theirs and say, that's not what we're going to do. So there are many, including, you know, Mike Lawler in the district to our south, that have said they're not going to do these cuts and promised over and over in town halls and other public remarks. And so now it's time to hold, you know, him and other Republicans who said they won't cut it accountable.
Have you talked to people like Lawler and other New York Republicans who might be, you know, closer to where the margin is?
Absolutely. The more calls and emails and input, shall we say, that they get, hopefully that will remind them of their oath to their constituents.
Now, are the Democrats united here? Because the Fishers right now are with the Republicans, some in the House conference. The fiscal hawks don't like the bill for that reason. Others are in the more moderate wing, like Lawler, who you've mentioned. But we haven't really talked about the minority approach to what will happen in the next few days.
Yeah, as we have for the last few years, as these critical attempts, as these critical cuts have been proposed, going back, you know, last Congress, they were trying to cut veteran health care, many other critical programs, and we're able to fight back and stop a lot of them. So Democrats have been united in saying no American should go without health care, particularly kids. The CHIP program, the Children's Health Insurance Program, is the specific way that, again, about 100,000 kids in my district and millions across the country get their care. So we've been fighting back, pushing back. There was a 26-hour, I think, battle into the night and the early morning in the committee that oversees this, where I was very proud of my colleagues telling the specific stories and holding up photos of their constituents who would be harmed, including kids, folks with disabilities, seniors in assisted living often count on Medicaid to pay for their ability to live and their last days with dignity and good care. So we're going to continue to fight back, and we're absolutely united on this.
So we were talking about the potential cuts to Medicaid that are in the president's domestic agenda bill that's making its way through Congress right now. You're also warning about what it would mean for food nutrition programs. Can you break down what the impacts would be in your district and beyond?
Yeah, thanks for having me on, Ian. We talked about healthcare cuts and how harmful those would be to in my district of 800,000 people, over 200,000 that count on Medicaid for healthcare. And in addition to those harms, there are also massive proposed cuts that we're voting on this week to food assistance programs, specifically SNAP, which is a longstanding, previously bipartisan, one of the most successful programs in our country's history, frankly, to help eradicate hunger. It both feeds those in need, including many children, and it also helps our local farmers who receive significant additional revenue to their farms to provide the food into the program. So it's a long time has been really seen as a win-win program. And in order to, frankly, give more tax cuts to ultra-billionaires and big corporations, Republicans in the House and the Senate and the president are all proposing really catastrophic cuts to food assistance programs. So in my district alone, tens of thousands of people would get less or potentially no food assistance who count on it. I was just actually speaking to a constituent yesterday who was telling me the story of growing up in a really tough situation in Newburgh, and that SNAP and food assistance was literally the only thing that kept he and his sister and brother alive. That story is happening all across our district in the Hudson Valley and the country, and we're fighting back to try to prevent those cuts.
You know, it occurs to me, talking to you, Congressman Ryan, that we're in line for a pretty dramatic remaking of everyday people's experience of the economy. I mean, in your district, it's already a very difficult housing landscape. There's not enough affordable housing for people. And now we're talking about essentials, like as you say, food stamps, nutrition support, healthcare. And at the same time, the president is also pursuing this aggressive tariff policy that is likely to raise consumer prices for people. You know, even mega stores like Walmart are talking about adding, 25% onto their costs. Have you given any thought to what all of this might mean for kind of the average Joe in your district right now?
I wake up thinking about it, go to bed thinking mm-hmm. about it. We hear all day from folks, whether it's at my town halls, our mobile cares van, where we travel all around the district and to all 82 of my towns, or the emails we get, text messages. I mean, people coming into the election in November were really feeling tremendous economic pressure around, like you said, housing, healthcare costs, food costs, utility, gas. And I think a lot of folks voted, understandably, around a hope that the economy could get better, that costs would come down. And in a truly bizarre way, and I think a very un-American way, we've seen the exact opposite. I mean, the bill and this reconciliation push that Trump and Republicans are trying to push through, to your point, it drives up all those costs. It removes some of the help that middle class and working class people count on to alleviate that pressure. On the tariff side, we're already seeing prices go up. I've talked to tons of small business owners in our district, and small businesses are really extra punished by this. You know, if you're Walmart, you have an army of lobbyists that can go try to get you an exception to these tariffs, and that's what all these big companies are doing, by the way. If you're a Main Street business in the Hudson Valley, you don't have that ability. So this really is a push that I think is directly counter to what our country's about. It's rather than helping middle class and working class people, it really punishes them to help Elon Musk and other ultra billionaires make more money. At that point, I don't really know how many yachts do you need,
Well, let me try to, if I can, to summarize what the president has been arguing and his Republican allies, that this is going to be some short-term pain for long-term gain. You know, the tax cuts will help spur investment in the economy, and the tariffs are, in the long run, better for American manufacturing because it'll force jobs to be brought back to the U.S. I take it you don't really buy that line of argument.
Well, number one, I don't think anybody cannot endure any short-term pain. I mean, people are absolutely at or past the threshold where I talk to people every week who have to make a decision between paying a healthcare bill or a car repair bill versus paying rent or putting food on the table. And that's just, again, fundamentally un-American. And so the idea that Trump, who himself is a billionaire, thinks everybody can take some short-term pain, it just defies the reality on the ground and shows how disconnected he and most of his party are from reality. So assuming, though, people could bear that, which, again, they certainly can't in my district, I still don't think there's any real historical data or evidence that these tariffs will actually help. I mean, if you look at the last time in this country we did massive tariffs like this, the Taft-Hartley, which was in the early 1900s, it literally led to the Great Depression. I mean, that's just a fact of history. So, again, I just don't know where this is coming from other than to attribute it to policies that largely benefit Trump's big donors and his mega billionaire backers and his own family. I mean, we've started to see, of course, a lot of reporting of his own family making tens of millions, if not billions, in cryptocurrency and Middle East hotel deals, and of course a $400 million jet, all of which are directly unconstitutional and illegal, by the way.
It doesn't seem like Congress, and I know Republicans are in charge now, so it's a little different from the first term, but it doesn't seem like Congress has the appetite to take President Trump and his administration on over issues like those you just mentioned. You know, I remember in the first term we heard a lot about the emoluments clause, but it seems that this time around there's a much different approach to that.
Oh, I respectfully disagree.
Please.
I mean, Democrats in the House certainly and the Senate too are fighting as hard as we can against harm to our constituents. It's not even about, I mean, I'm not a fan of Trump, as I think you and probably listeners know, but it's not about him. It's about protecting my constituents, protecting the American people from all the harms we've been talking about. And certainly, we've been rallying and fighting back hard. You know, there's a lot of battles to fight here, and I think that's part of, unfortunately, this sort of shock and awe plan that we've seen in the first 100-120 days was intentional and articulated in Project 2025, which they've been following essentially to the letter. So we're pushing back in courts. We're pushing back where we can legislatively. And in each of these, by the way, we just need a few Republicans, like literally three or more, but three Republicans could stop the healthcare cuts, could stop the food assistance cuts, could reassert the role of Congress, by the way, on tariffs, which, you know, constitutionally, it's Congress that has that authority, and the Republicans just gave it to Trump to inflict all this harm on our small and medium businesses and on the American people as prices go up. So when you say Congress hasn't pushed back, I think it's sadly the reality that Republicans have just been lockstep behind them. I wish that weren't the case. I know that sounds maybe partisan, but that's just the facts. That they've just not spoken up against these cuts. And when it's come time to take a hard vote to stop harm to their constituents, they're really cowered into a corner by Trump and his kind of, he has this sort of both physical and virtual mob of folks that'll intimidate any Republicans who might question him.
Let me spend a minute on this Monopoly Busters Caucus. You are a member. It's a new idea. So what is it hoping to accomplish?
It's a new idea, but also really not a new idea. This is, I think, important that, you know, the idea of competition in our economy, that more businesses competing with each other helps drive innovation and bring down costs, is a very American thing and frankly, used to be a bipartisan thing. And particularly, I was spent some time at the FDR Library recently. Of course, FDR talked about breaking up monopolistic companies and did so effectively and drove decades of economic growth in the middle of the 20th century in America by doing so. So we're really kind of going back to those ideas, which have been proven to be successful, because we're seeing a growing monopoly system in many parts of our economy. For example, in the Hudson Valley, we see United Healthcare, the single biggest healthcare company in the world, buying up a lot of our local healthcare practices, driving up the costs, making it almost impossible to get appointments, lowering the quality. Patients suffer, a lot of the doctors and nurses and providers suffer, and United continues to make literally record-breaking profits month after month and quarter after quarter. And again, I just don't think that's what our founders intended when they formed the country. I don't think that's what most people want. They want choice. They want competition.
I know not every member of Congress likes this, but I do have something of a lightning round for you today.
As long as it's about the Knicks, then I'm good with that.
Jalen Brunson's polling is pretty high right now, that's for sure. So, you know, in our last conversation, you were talking about the way that, I think it's fair to say, you know, private equity impacts healthcare in your coverage area. You actually have put out the results of a survey of your constituents about their experiences at certain medical practices in the district lately. What did you find out?
Yeah, the lightning round version is when one company controls all healthcare, it's not good for patients or healthcare providers, even doctors and nurses. We heard back from literally thousands of people who essentially said once United Healthcare started buying up all these local healthcare practices, it made it, the cost went up, the quality went down, the wait times went up. And so we're using this data and really evidence to try to push back and say, this is not good for anybody, and we need to get back to a more competitive options for people to have choice.
You know, you bring a certain important perspective to this show and also to the Congress as a veteran yourself. You have wanted to see Pete Hegseth fired as defense secretary. I take it he hasn't won you over yet.
Certainly hasn't won me over, and I don't think he's won over the American people. There are senior military leaders, you know, who I talk to who can't say so publicly, but are certainly have deep concern and anxiety that he's unqualified, unfit, unserious at a very serious time. And we've seen, you know, multiple documented examples of leaked classified information that could have, and thankfully wasn't, fatal for pilots, for example, flying over Africa a month or two ago. We've seen multiple rounds of purges of qualified, patriotic military officers who weren't willing to pledge fealty to the president rather than the Constitution. And it's a really dangerous erosion of this fundamental principle that we have an apolitical military that you know, that's often the unraveling of democracies. And I hope and pray truly that that's not where we're headed, but I'm concerned that we've taken significant steps in that direction, and Hegseth has presided over all of it. He absolutely needs to go.
Yeah, just because of the way the timing has worked out, I haven't had a chance to ask you about the group text that so many of our top U.S. officials were on with the editor of The Atlantic. Were you flabbergasted reading that reporting?
I was just stunned, infuriated, frankly, embarrassed. I mean, it's just amateur hour. And when I had a top secret clearance as an Army officer, had I done anything approaching that, disclosing sensitive operational real-time information before pilots even took off, I would have lost my clearance. I would have been prosecuted under the Uniform Code of Military Justice and likely served actual jail time for something such a flagrant violation. And then to add insult to injury, they wouldn't take accountability for it. That's, I think, more concerning than anything, that if you make a mistake like that, you're new on the job. Okay, it's not good, but at least own it. But instead, they just sort of lied and they lied to the American people about it.
So this is a sensitive one, Congressman. You know, on the show last year, you were one of the first Democrats in the House who said that President Biden had to get out of the race and wasn't in good shape to run for re-election in November. And now there's this news that he's battling an aggressive form of prostate cancer. And it's all coming at the same time that there's new books coming out about what his capacity was last year or not. What are your thoughts on, first of all, the diagnosis of the president, and second of all, what we now know about the kind of shape he was in seeking a second term?
Yeah, I mean, it's just, of course, when you hear that horrific news about anybody, it's heartbreaking. And we all know family or friends that have struggled with and fought back against cancer. So, you know, it, most importantly, our love and our prayers to the president and his family and the first lady as they, as they're, I'm sure, processing this and dealing with it. And he's a tough guy, so he's fought through a lot in his life, and I hope they can fight through this. And he, and the cruel irony, of course, that he started this cancer moonshot after his son, you know, passed from glioblastoma. So we're rooting for them. And yeah, look, this, it's just a, I think it's an all around tragic situation. And I took no pleasure in saying what I said last fall, that I didn't think he was up to the job to campaign. And, but I thought that that's my responsibility to be direct and honest. And if my own party's wrong, I'll say it. And if the other party's wrong, I'll say it. Cause I think that's just what people sort of deserve and expect from their representatives. So I stand by that and just hope that, you know, they can get through this, this time.
Have you given any thought to running for higher office in the next cycle or afterward?
I'm just trying to, like, get my kids out the door in the morning and make sure they eat their dinner and hope the Knicks keep going here. So, no, definitely not. It's one day at a time in our lives right now.
Okay. I mean, it's got to be tough to have the job you have and to have young kids the way you do. I'm sure, like most people in Congress, you can't wait to get out of Washington when you're there.
Yeah, it'll be nice to have our summer district period, which doesn't start till July, but we'll be home for Memorial Day this weekend. We have a week off, so that'll be good. And yeah, I do think it's important to have more members of Congress who have young kids and who sort of understand what working families are going through every day. And that, I think that's a good thing to have representatives that get that. So
what were your thoughts about your colleague Elise Stefanik from the New York delegation not ending up going to the UN as UN ambassador and instead staying in the House?
There is karma in this world.
Meaning?
Meaning that her true cowardice in retreating from what used to be a sensible, pragmatist way of approaching her job to being a total sycophant of Trump was rewarded by him turning his back on her. And there is some karma in that.
Do you think she'll actually run for governor next year?
I hope not. I think she's one of the most dangerous, and I don't use that lightly, elected officials we have, who clearly has betrayed her oath to the Constitution. And she should be not serving in any office, certainly not the governor of our great state.
Are you okay with Anthony Volpe being the Yankees' starting shortstop for a playoff run?
Love Volpe. Watched him play on the Hudson Valley Renegades.
That's right.
And yeah, he'll meet the moment.
Okay. Well, it's always a pleasure to speak with New York Congressman Pat Ryan, a Democrat from the 18th District in office since 2022. Congressman Ryan, thanks so much for spending this time and all your previous appearances with us, and we look forward to the next one.
Thank you, Ian. I love how we go from Stefanik to Volpe in one fell swoop. I appreciate that.
There's great power in hosting the Congressional Corner, no doubt about it.
Thank you.
Okay, that does it for this episode of the WAMC News Podcast. Thanks so much for listening. Until next time, I'm Ian Pickus.